Excellent. So in the studio we have also Joe Doon. You probably have heard him talk to him before, and myself, Britt Dufonnet, and that's all. So David, what is new in the sky, basically?
Well, there's always so much happening in the Irish sky. We fill our magazine with it every month. And in particular, the big story coming up over the next few months is that the planet Venus is coming into evening skies. We've had Venus in the morning skies before this, but when it's A, in the evening sky, and B, around Christmas, a lot of people wonder, is it the Star of Bethlehem? Why wasn't it there last year? Is this a sign of the second coming about to happen? And
yes,
the answer is no, it's planet Venus making one of its great evening passes.
Well,
it blazes in the sky, outshining
everything. I don't know about the second coming, I always wonder about that, but the planet Venus is supposed to be the one which guided the Magi to go find Jesus, yes?
If the Star of Bethlehem really was an astronomical object, then it certainly wasn't Venus, because the wise men wouldn't have been that wise, because every few years you get to see Venus in the evening sky. So there would have been astrologers at the time. We now know that astrology appears to work, but in fact doesn't actually. It's very interesting psychology that goes on with people when you tell them horoscopes, which is fascinating in its own right. But unfortunately, the link to astronomy doesn't work. You can actually make up random horoscopes and they work just as well as the real horoscopes. But back then, they didn't know that.
But there were people who were astrologers and astronomers at the same time, in Jesus' time, yes?
Yeah, I mean, the astronomy and astrology of the day is fairly well documented. There are records going back that far, not just in the Bible. It's also interesting, there's only one book of the New Testament that records the star. So maybe it was just a story made up, some people think. However, the problem is this. We know two things. One, Christ wasn't born in 1 AD or 1 BC, and he certainly wasn't born on the 25th of December.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, we had a lot of discussion about this 25th of December story many times. When do you think he was born yourself?
Well, what happened in the year 7 BC was that there was something that would have been a huge story at the time. Given that people believed in astrology back then even more than they do today, there was a coming together of the planets Jupiter and Saturn, which happens every, a few times every human lifetime. But this was happening against the backdrop of Pisces, the constellation associated with rebirth in the astrology of the time. And Jupiter was always a planet associated with kings. Saturn was always associated with Jews. There was a prediction that the Messiah was coming. And if you have King, Jews, rebirth in the sky, and a very bright pair of objects that you're seeing, then that would have been screaming out to the Magi, the wise men of the time, that this was the time for the Savior to arrive. And that's why they would have set forth. Now, there should be documented records of that happening. It was an obvious big story at the time, and indeed there is, not only in the Bible and the New Testament, but there are other records of it. So if you were an almighty God, you would presumably arrange for your son to be born in the very instant when it was most auspicious. And we can predict that time very accurately today to be a Tuesday evening on the 15th of September in the year 7 BC.
So he was a Virgo, not a Capricorn. Joe has something to ask. Joe Doon, you have the mic.
We all celebrated the millennium several years too late. That's another thing.
The thing was that astronomically, or astrologically, I suppose, the stars that we call the zodiac, or the sets of stars that we call the zodiac, actually move out of phase, don't they, every 1,500 years or so?
And every time there's a total eclipse over highly populated areas, the astronomers try to tell people, watch where the sun actually is, especially if the day of the eclipse is your birthday and you know which star sign you are. And you'll actually see, because you can see the stars behind the eclipse sun, that the sun is in the wrong constellation.
Yes.
Because the Earth acts as wobble every roughly 25,000 years.
Yeah.
And astrology was invented about 2,000 years ago. So there's been a significant movement of the zodiac over that period of time. And you can see this during an eclipse, that the sun is in the wrong constellation. You're about one constellation out. I'm not an astrologer, so I don't know which way it goes, but all I know is, first of all, that there can't possibly be any link to human beings and the night sky. And secondly, we have this brilliant psychological effect that was discovered in the 50s and 60s with huge academic studies that were done, which show why people think astrology works. And almost nobody in the world knows about this research. I've mentioned it on a few radio shows. Here we are telling everyone listening into Near FM that, you know, astrology has been categorically disproven as an astronomical phenomenon. But I don't like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There's a huge, very important discovery psychologically about what people are prepared to believe. And if you go look at the research that was done, it is absolutely fascinating. And we didn't, I don't think, plan to discuss astrology in great detail today, but at some stage I'd love to tell you all about the research. I did a lot of work looking into it many decades ago, because I thought, how can so many people believe in astrology when it can't possibly work? Let's see if there's any evidence in research. Turns out there's a lot.
There's a lot of it there. The birth of the Nazarene was supposed to coincide with the coming of the age of Pisces.
Which it did.
Yes.
So the thing about that conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn is, first of all, it's going to happen again in December of next year. I know we're going to talk about next year. However, it doesn't happen in the constellation of Pisces. So, you know, don't wrap up your affairs just yet. We're not expecting the rapture in 12 months' time. But it will happen in Pisces every 800 years. And 800 years after the birth of Christ, there wasn't the second coming. There wasn't one 1600 years later. And there probably won't be one 2,400 years later in about 4 centuries' time. Yeah. We think it was just that, you know, this astronomical event did happen. The Magi were excited about it. People did look for a Messiah. And Jesus Christ was definitely a historical figure. And at the very least, whether you're religious or not, an interesting person in history, or at least the myths or stories about him certainly are. We can't discount all that. Something happened 2,000 years ago. If you have faith, you can believe it was the Son of God. He's supposed to have been a Jew, but he was a Jew, and the Jewish faith doesn't believe that he was the Son of God, so there's an awful lot of controversy about the whole thing. But we know for a fact the astronomical event happened in 7 BC, and that's about almost exactly the time the Christ was born, because, by the way, our calendar is wrong. The Catholic Church, Christian Church, wasn't powerful for the first few centuries after Christ's birth. Eventually, it got into the Roman Empire and sort of took over, and eventually the Christian Church invented its own calendar and got rid of the Roman calendar. But that didn't happen for 500 years. Yeah. And the then Pope, who tasked a learned monk with this task to go back through history and figure out the exact year that Jesus Christ was born, because it had gotten lost in history over those centuries, we know he made several mistakes. This is well documented by theologians, that he made some mistakes. We know Christ was born a few years BC. No one's sure exactly how many, 5 to 10 years. This event sits right in the middle of that period, and it just sticks out like a sore thumb, screaming, "I am the astronomical event that heralded the birth of Christ."
If you were looking at the wrong man, would that make a difference?
Because
the original leader of that movement was John the Baptist. And so there's 6 months or so between the birth of the Baptist and the birth of the Nazarene. So,
but at this stage, you see, you're going beyond my pay grade, and I'm not a great historian. I've done some research and read some books. There's a brilliant book. We've had him over to give public lectures in Ireland over the past few decades. A man called Professor David Hughes from Sheffield University. And in the 1970s, when computers became powerful to run back the laws of gravity thousands of years, he did that and showed this event happened around that particular time. Yeah. He also was a better historian than I am, a better biblical scholar. And he did a lot of research and eventually published a book on the whole subject. And there have been other theories that maybe it was a comet, maybe it was an exploding star, or other atmospheric effects. But the problem is this. That big event in the sky happened. The astrologers of the day would have been making this prediction. If there was a supernova, that's just an extra thing. So it had to have been that particular event for my money. Yeah. And every year or a few years, a new book comes out about what the star of Bethlehem might have been. Yeah. The problem is you can't get away from the fact we know Jupiter and Saturn lined up in Pisces in 7 BC and what it meant to the wise men of the time.
And where was Venus at the time, do you know?
Well, actually, today, with a few taps on a computer keyboard, we could pull up the sky for any minute, plus or minus 10,000 years, with pretty good accuracy and tell you where all the planets were.
So you can actually answer
smartphone as well. You can actually answer. David Hughes did it for the first time. It was a tricky calculation.
Because if there was those three planets together, that would be even more spectacular.
Well, I know people did look for Venus and comets in the historical records and lots of other effects as well at the time. And this is how David Hughes found this one particular event. I mean, his book, I don't know if it's still in print or not, but it's a fascinating read. We certainly have a copy in Astronomy Ireland's library signed by David himself. And he goes on about how everything that was going on in the area at the time. You know, he is an academic, and he did the research very, very well indeed. And, you know, looking at planets like Venus and what they were doing. And, for instance, Herod, I remember learning in school that, you know, there was the massacre of the innocents when he tried to kill all newborn babies, wasn't it, under the age of two. And we know Herod died, and then there was a lunar eclipse scene in the Middle East, and the only one that fits the timescale is one in 4 BC. So if Christ was already 2 years old by then, well, that's 6 BC, so it fits in nicely into all the other ideas about when he might have been born. So I think it's a fascinating story. It's great you can link astronomy, which is definitely correct, with a bit of astrology, which is what people didn't understand properly at the time, with a bit of religion, which is always a bit dangerous.
It's very dangerous. But had the Baptist not died, we wouldn't be talking about the Jesus of Nazareth or Emmanuel of Nazareth at all. We'd be talking about the Baptist and the movement that the Baptist formed. So I think that people are looking, personally, I think that people are looking at the wrong person because they had to invent
it.
John the Baptist, who was born on Tuesday, the 15th of September in the year 7 BC.
Yeah.
I'll put that to David Hughes next time I'm talking to him.
Because I think the problem was that they... the Baptist wasn't supposed to die. He was supposed to lead that movement. When he was murdered by using deep magic, or whatever you like to call it, they had to find a replacement. The only replacement they could find was this fellow from Nazareth. And so they slotted him into and made the history, his background history, fit the story, because he was a child of God. He was a child of the temple. As his mother, was a Vestal Virgin in the temple.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating area of research. And I'm learning stuff on this interview myself. So I can't comment on the history of the religious goings on at the time, other than I know there's a lot of controversy. Yeah. Most of the planet do not believe that Jesus Christ was the Son of God, but a huge number of people do. And I don't want to get involved in that.
We're not getting involved in what people believe or not because this is too big.
I can tell you that event in 7 BC definitely happened, whether you're a Jew, atheist, a Christian, or anything else. If you were there at the time, you would have seen this in the sky, just as you're going to see Venus, which has nothing to do with Star Bethlehem, but does look, does suggest the whole story.
David, those stars or planets were on the west, because we assume that those magi came from the east, right?
Well, in fact, David Hughes goes into it in great detail in his book. There is also, by the way, a documentary made for television, which RTE has shown many years. It's called Christmas Star. David Hughes is in it. It's a TV production company that basically made a documentary of his book. And check the TV listings. Maybe it's available online these days for The Christmas Star. And you'll see a lot of the research. But the planets came together three times. And that has astrological importance of how it happened. And it fits nicely with the story when, first of all, they would have predicted it and the first coming together would have happened. Oh, look, our predictions were right. Secondly, they would have set off when the second passage of the two planets happened. And thirdly, it's most likely to believe that when they came together a third time, that that's when Christ would have been born. And it fits nicely with, we've seen a star in the east or the west, I've forgotten the quote from the Bible, then they head off. Mm-hmm. He even shows the path across the desert they probably took and what direction things would have been in. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he arrives ultimately in Bethlehem.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so... So you have a star in the west and the Magi. You still believe the Magi? You did come over, yeah?
Did you?
That's the big story at Christmas, is the Magi coming, right?
Yeah. Well, but then again, Abraham, the founder of
if you want any present this Christmas, you have to believe in that story.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to put together what could be true and what could be myth. Yeah. I'm quite sure there's quite a lot of myths mixed with the truth in this story. Yeah. Yeah? Like we were discussing the solstice earlier on, and the solstice now is on the 22nd, 21st of December, which is next week, basically. And before that, Jesus was not celebrated automatically at the solstice. So when did this happen? Joe said it's something happened in Ireland in year 800.
No, I've seen that after it became the official religion of the Rome.
Yes.
That they, up to that time, they were still using the loaves and the fishes as the symbol for Christianity. They were signed the fish for Christianity because of the spices. But when they couldn't overcome the intervention of our people, the Gaels, they've decided that they better take this cross, which was the Earth Mother, the symbol for the Earth Mother and for fertility. They decided to adopt that symbol for Christianity, and that was associated with the solstices and equinoxes and the cross quarter feasts. And so they took it on board and they made that the symbol for the church, for the Christians.
So at which time was Christmas decided to be on the 25th of December? Do you know?
The 25th of December was so they would not celebrate that was the last day of the solstice celebration, because it was 5 days before, 5 days after, and the event itself. And the 25th of December was the last day that the power
of the big festivities.
The people that use elemental powers, yeah. that power of the solstice would still be around until the 25th.
Yes.
If you started celebrating or if you started doing any of your hoojahs or whatever you're going to be doing at that time, it wouldn't be effective.
So therefore, it's like a magic act.
It's all to do with magic. I mean,
I was told, I don't know, David, if you're still interested in this conversation.
I'm listening with great interest.
I was told that the god Mithra, which originated from Iran, was also born on the 25th of December. Mm. So is that a coincidence? Because
again,
it was very adapted to in Rome. There was a lot of people who liked the god Mithra, and actually in France as well, we have god Mithra shrines in forest and everywhere. Like, you know.
Well, I'm not a great expert in the whole area, but my understanding is very simple. The solstice was extremely important. It was the Irish that basically discovered it 6,000 years ago. And, you know, the pyramids, Stonehenge, they're all Johnny-come-lately, it's nearly 1,000 years later. Yeah. We built this massive monument in the Stone Age with no real tools to celebrate the fact that the Irish had figured out exactly how long the year was, because they'd come from the Middle East where it's warm all year round, you can grow crops all year round. In Ireland, this close to the Arctic Circle, you cannot. I'm pretty sure the first settlers would have died in the first harsh Irish winter that came. Once they figured out the length of the year was 365, mm-hmm. and there's some evidence they knew it was 365 and a quarter days, that was a huge discovery. That's on a par with discovering the Big Bang as the origin of the universe. And the Irish did that, thereby founding all of astronomy and all of space exploration, something we should be proud of.
Mm-hmm. But David,
there was a celebration for the solstice. And of course, anybody who's got a different god, shall we say, there's already a public holiday around that time. If you don't know when he was born, why not just use that public holiday to celebrate it? Some people unkindly say the Christians hijacked the pagan festivals. They were just being opportunists.
That's probable.
Well, they hijacked two, well, they used two of the feasts for their two main people. The Baptist, the Baptist is assigned the the summer solstice, and the Nazarene is assigned the winter solstice.
Maybe it was a feast of babies.
It makes sense.
It's like the birth of the sun, and now the birth of the God. Yeah,
but they're the only
God.
They're the only two saints in the Christian calendar that their birth is recognized. All other saints, their death is recognized, and you have a major
and
time.
And that's the thing, you know. If you want to celebrate, you don't know when it was during the year.
Yeah.
Like what I would do is, if I was in power, I would pick the time when there's already a public holiday.
Yeah.
So it seems relatively simple to me. Yeah. But the solstice is fascinating in itself, and it's happening on the 22nd of the month this year, not the 21st, which is normal.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the story of the calendar, which is itself is certainly it's scientific, it's not in dispute, and we know now the exact length of the year. We measure things with thousands of a second accuracy.
Yes.
And we know there's problems coming for the current calendar that we use thousands of years into the future when the seasons will get out of sync with the month of the year. So down the road, somebody's going to have to figure out what to do with it, what to do about it.
David, not to be contradictory, but we know that there are megalithic structures not only in Ireland, but almost all over Europe, yes? And some of them are actually older than Newgrange. So what makes you so sure that they are started it all, you know?
Well, I'm not aware of those. I'd like to know about them.
Well, but Newgrange,
monuments lined up with the sunrise or sunset on midwinters. Now, admittedly, Newgrange would have been the pinnacle. They would have known about this long before they set out to build it.
Well, I think most of them, there probably were a lot of them before, and most of them have been demolished. We're just lucky to have a few.
What I found out from the archaeoastronomers, the academics who look into this, is that, you know, if you have thousands of stone circles or stone collections, scattered randomly, some of them are going to accidentally line up with any interesting point that you want, east, west, sunrise, sunset, solstice, equinox, etc., etc. So Newgrange was very specific with the light box that it's lined up to the accuracy of human vision at the time.
Yeah.
When you allow for the fact that, and I was saying the Earth's axis wobbles, Professor Tom Ray in Dublin Institute of Antiquity did some great work on this originally, which proved that it's not just a chance alignment. Of course, we could be wrong.
I'm quite sure it's on purpose myself. Now, we only have 5 minutes left, so if you want, you can talk about that meteor shower. Is this still going on?
Yes, we just had the best meteor shower of the year, the Geminids, over the weekend. There was some cloud and rain around, but lots of people have recorded meteors. There's been fireball reports coming into Astronomy Ireland every day as a result. And we were asking people to go out and count it. Now, it wasn't great this year because there was a very bright moon in the sky, and that swamps all the fainter ones. But next year, around the same date, December 13th, there'll be no moon around. And in fact, the second best shooting star shower of the year in August, the Perseids, because I know you wanted to talk about 2020, that's going to be moon-free as well. So that two of the greatest meteor showers next year will be really spectacular. They were a bit of a disappointment this year, apart from those nice fireballs that people saw. There's lots more happening next year as well. There's an eclipse in January that we're promoting in the next issue of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Mars is going to be at its closest for, I think, over a decade, certainly very bright. Around October is the best time to see it. That's coming together at Jupiter and Saturn again in December. So there's a fascinating sky calendar lined up for us for 2020 to open a new decade.
So all these things would have been happening in ancient times too, yeah?
Yes, and in fact, lots of interesting things happened. We had an eclipse of the moon as it happens in January of this year, you may remember.
Yes.
We had a bit of an eclipse during the summer, but best seen in South America. There was the transit of Mercury on November the 11th this year. That won't happen again until 2032. There was one of those in Venus in 2012 that won't happen for over 100 years into the future. So there's always something interesting happening. Regulars like the meteor showers are going to happen every year. Things like Mars happens every 2 and a bit years. Venus is great every 8 years. And when you throw all these things into the mix, you always get a fantastic year. There's always great things to see in the sky every year. The next, of course, big one is the total eclipse of the sun that we'll see from Ireland. But they are extremely rare, and there won't be one of those till 2090.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure we'll be around that long. Anyway, thank you. Thank you very much, David.
1724.
Oh, this one may be, yeah.
And we'll cover all of this in Astronomy Island magazine. People want to get it, give it as a gift subscription this Christmas. You'll see it all on our website.
Amazing.
A lot of people do that.
Amazing.
Astronomy.ie.
Okay. Listen, David, thank you very much for all this information. Fascinating as usual. And hope to see you in the new year. Happy New Year, happy Christmas, happy solstice.
Merry Christmas to you and all the listeners.
Whatever
is
your religion or lack of it. So, bye bye. Thank you very much.
Bye bye.
This is David Moore again on the FM about astronomy. And this time he's going to talk to us about a lecture that he's planning to organize in Trinity College on the 13th of March. Is that it?
January, because it's our New Year public lecture.
New Year public lecture. In the building, physics building in Trinity College. That's at the very back of Trinity College.
And the important thing is that although it's in Trinity College, it's not an academic lecture. It's aimed at the general public. It's just that we have friends in Trinity College, and they're in the city centre, and they have fantastic lecture facilities, great rooms with fantastic projectors to give a really good show. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Niamh Shaw, who a lot of people know as an actress on Fair City, wants to be an astronaut. So it is a fantastic story she has for our New Year public lecture that the whole family will enjoy.
So she's an actress and she's an astronaut and an astronomer and an engineer as well. Yeah. A question I forgot
to
ask.
A lot of people have interesting careers. I mean, if you like the band Queen, and who doesn't?
I love Brian
May, the lead guitarist, he's an astrophysicist. He was studying astrophysics in England. And this guy called Freddie Mercury came along and convinced him to give that up and go off on this crazy career as a rock band guitarist.
And we can only thank him for it, because, I mean, we all love his music. I mean, something I want to mention as well is an Irish engineer who designed the computer program that got NASA to send people to the moon, isn't it? So... Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Pat Norris, again, a young guy interested in mathematics of all things, ended up working for software companies in England in the 60s, and then got a contract to go over to NASA. You can imagine NASA in the late 60s were hoovering up scientists from all over the planet to get the first men on the moon and beat the Russians. And he got a contract to go over there and worked on the mathematics of how you land on the moon. He was so good at it that after he landed and came back to the Earth safely, Neil Armstrong himself gave the Irishman Pat Norris an award for his work on the Apollo mission. So he got to shake hands with Neil Armstrong. Pat very kindly gave a lecture this year for us, being the 50th anniversary of the moon landings, and told the whole story. And the great thing about these lectures is they're recorded on DVD, and you can still get Pat Norris talk on our website. Go to astronomy.ie. You'll see on the menu at left is lecture DVDs, and there's a multi-lecture going back, gosh, it must be 10, 15 years now, hundreds of them for you to pick from. You'll see Pat Norris talk there. You can even order Niamh Shaw's lecture that's on January the 13th next month in advance, and the DVD will be posted out to you when she gives the lecture, and we record it.
And she will mention Pat Norris as well, or will she? You don't know.
She might do. I've heard her give this talk before in Mayo this year.
because
and it's really about the way her own plan to get to Mars.
It's like the forgotten hero of space, space conquest, I would say.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah, I was going to say that. I think that Neil Armstrong actually got to shake the hand of Pat Norris, rather than the other way around, because without Pat Norris, that would not have happened.
Like a proud Irish
man. Yeah. Neil Armstrong.
That's exactly the way it should be.
Anybody, I mean, they send monkeys into space, you know.
But and dogs.
It's people like Pat Norris that's actually able to get them up there, you know, and get humans up there. So they're the ones that should be
claimed. Let's step it up a bit and make it even more Irish. When I met Neil Armstrong himself in 2003 and interviewed him, one of the questions we had for him, and we didn't know at that stage that Barack Obama is Irish, and we didn't know that Tom Cruise is Irish. Yeah. So I didn't think it'd just be a quick question. The answer would be no, and we'd move on to the next question. But when I asked him, had he any Irish ancestry, because I thought Armstrong was a Scottish name, he said, yes, and his eyes lit up. He said, we just traced our family history, and in the 1800s, the family left County Fermanagh to go to America. Because he was born in 1930, I think it was. That's only a generation or two. So his genes were mostly Irish when they landed on the moon. So we can claim the first man on the moon was predominantly Irish.
So the moon is basically Irish now,
We get everywhere, don't we?
We invented space exploration. We had the Hubble Space Telescope of its day at the time of the famine in Burr and County Offaly, with the world's most popular astronomy club today. Ireland's a member of the biggest telescope consortium on the planet. We are at cutting edge today. Last century, the century before, and every century going back 5,000 years.
That is very good. Now, Nish shows she wants to go to Mars. This is an interesting question because it takes like a long time to go to Mars and back, or maybe she doesn't want to come back. And if you go there, what is she expecting to find?
Could kill all the natives like they did with the other people. Yeah.
Can you have an? Do you have an answer for that, or do you have speculation? I would say because nobody knows for sure now. Eh?
Yeah. Well, I think you know it's like if you climb Mount Everest, what are you hoping to find? There'll be a bit of snow on top of this mountain. The experience is all about the journey, and not just journey climbing the mountain or going into space. It's about getting to become an astronaut. Getting into space the first time, learning how to live in space, ultimately getting to Mars, and then learning how to survive on Mars. I mean, there are some people think that we shouldn't be doing this, it's too early, Mars is too inhospitable, but I think the way technology is going, most of those problems can be solved by technology. It may be expensive today, but like everything else, once we start mass producing it, I mean, we mentioned earlier that David Hughes used one of the early computers to run back the calculations to the time of Christ and what was happening in the sky. Now you can do that on your smartphone, and there's billions of those sitting in people's pockets. So what's it going to be like in another 50 years when, you know, the kind of technology we have, we can't even dream of? So I don't think it's that far-fetched. I hope we don't spoil Mars like we did the Earth. And there are lots of billionaires, the world's richest people, are now planning to go to Mars to put 1 million people on that planet by the end of this century. It sounds crazy. And if anybody else said it, except the people that have the money for it, I wouldn't believe them. But you have to listen to people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon and Elon Musk of Tesla and formerly of PayPal and all those projects he touched that just seem to turn to gold.
Yeah, but the thing is, what do you think about this idea of terraforming the planet Mars
to suit our
needs, to make it look more like Earth?
Yeah. Instead of
do you think it's a good idea, or is it a vile interference in nature?
It's like
it's a very difficult task to do, and it will take centuries for it to be done the way people are planning. So it isn't going to happen in the short term.
No.
But you know, we've got billions of years of the future left in this universe. That's going to be the blink of an eye on the long-term time scale. And, you know, walking around, if you go to the northern countries, Iceland and Norway, go inside the Arctic Circle and the like, these are very inhospitable places to live, but people can survive there. Now, you need heavy clothing. You don't quite need a spacesuit, but you certainly need good clothing and equipment to survive that far north. And Mars is just the next step beyond that. You're going to need an oxygen mask at the very least, but it's not as inhospitable a planet as, say, the surface of the moon, where the temperatures vary wildly, or Venus, where the pressure, temperatures, and everything else is
I think Venus is out of the question.
Extremely dangerous.
Venus is not something we can explore like this.
And a minor amount of technology, we could survive on Mars.
Yeah. But what about terraforming? Do you think it's a good idea or not? Like, you know, making...
I'm in two minds about it. Obviously, we'd have. Do you really want to change a planet that may have its own life? That's exactly. Nothing to do with the life.
Yeah, because if we do that, we may kill the life that's already there. If there is any life there,
green creatures. Exactly.
So the missions
that are going to Mars. There's one. There's several in orbit about the planet at the moment, or roving on the planet as we speak. There are more planned to go there. We need to give those a chance to find out if there is any life on Mars, or is it a sterile planet? Mm. If it's a sterile planet, then I don't have that much of a problem with terraforming it. One wonders, though, will it be done in the right way? Yeah. Elon Musk himself suggested nuking the ice cap on Mars to melt all that water.
I wouldn't be for that. Silly.
I'd like to see the science behind that before we give them some nuclear bombs to do it with.
Other than that,
you can do it biologically. Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot of conjecture at the moment, and we haven't even landed on Mars yet. I'm sure the first missions to go there will come back. And it'll be a long time before anybody starts seriously terraforming that planet.
But would we recognise life on Mars? I mean, we have a very limited view of life, of what life is. I mean, even on our own planet, we're only recently learning that trees can communicate to each other, that trees are a whole global ecosystem unto themselves. And we're only finding that out now. So...
It's a bit of a tricky question, because how do you define life? Are viruses life?
Yeah.
You know, they certainly aren't conscious sentient like we and higher animals are. Are multi-celled organisms officially life? I think they are.
I think once you've got something
as complicated as DNA and RNA, you've got something that's certainly worth preserving, and then you can argue the semantics over whether it's life or not. Yeah. And in the very complicated chemistry, which is ultimately just all that we all are, and then we have these vast systems built on top of this, it is enormously complicated. And whether you can actually make such giant molecules like DNA from the soup that was lying around on planets in the early years for millions of years, we still don't know the answer to that question yet. And we don't also know if the life on Mars, if there is any, wasn't blasted off the Earth where it first formed and seeded Mars, or vice versa. Maybe the life started on Mars, it had oceans in the beginning, and it seeded the Earth. We know there are Martian rocks lying on the surface of the Earth. Yeah. You'll see a picture on our website of me holding one. I've actually touched the planet Mars already, even though I haven't been there. And if there were microbes embedded in that there was a mechanism for transporting simple biological life from one planet to the other. And then we have the moons of Jupiter, which probably couldn't be cross-contaminated in that way. And they might have their own type of life in their oceans, where it should be way too cold for it to happen. If we find life on all three, and we have one solar system where we have three independent ways of producing life, we know the universe is going to be teeming with at least simple life. But just remember, it took about 4,000 million years for that life to evolve into intelligent beings. And there are a lot of steps along the way that may have been just a complete fluke that led to us being alive and being able to think about it.
Our life is far more popular than we believe, because, I mean,
like Star Trek.
Even on this planet, life forms exist in super cold temperatures. They life, like fish and that, can actually live at temperatures below freezing. Because when it stops being solid, when water stops being solid and turns back into a liquid,
like in Antarctica,
and we have lots of examples of extremophiles. I remember a couple of years ago, we were writing a story about life that was found in extremely toxic arsenic-laden lakes that would kill any other creatures.
Yes,
but you can imagine what happens as the environment changes slowly. Yeah. Most of the animals die off, but some of them end up genetically evolving into strains that can cope with that.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that was brought home to me was once I was typing away on one of my computer keyboards, maybe a laptop, and this tiny red mite, perhaps a spider mite, walked across the keyboard. And it was so small, I could barely see it with the naked eye. And I realized that, you know, it didn't squash it, but was thinking about squashing it. I didn't squash it. I thought, that's based on DNA. It's got a digestive system, a small brain, muscles. Yeah. It can move itself independently, and that's life on the Earth. And at the other extreme, we've got blue whales that weigh 100 tons. And if you've got those extremes of life on this one planet, from that tiny thing up to this monster blue whale thing, what kind of life can exist out there in the universe?
And we have microscopic bacteria that live in colonies on the volcanic fissures and the depths of the ocean.
Well, even crabs in the fissures that you're talking about, the water is like 200 degrees Celsius, and you have crabs living there. And you have other things like shrimps. And normally
they would
be cooked.
That's probably where we evolved from.
It would be cooked.
Hydrothermal vents deep in the ocean, which we think may exist on some of the moons of the outer planets today as well.
Yeah, and we're just, we are just...
So is there life there?
And according to Mr. Einstein, if we believe him, we're actually energy, just a form of energy which oscillates at a particular rate in relation to all the other oscillations of other energy fields, and that gives us our shape and what we are and build them into colonies, and that's what we are. Yeah, we're just sacks of water.
I know, David, you're not a biologist, but is it... likely, you think that in other planets, if there are life, if there is life on other planets, that it might be based on carbon, hydrogen, and all this stuff that we are made of here? Or would it be made out of other stuff? Like, you know, I don't know.
It's a fair question. And there are mechanisms for producing very exotic life. But what we find is that when we look out into deep space, we can find out what atoms are in very distant parts of the universe, and we find it's the same stuff that's lying around on the Earth. And we know when you have a star, there's lots of those, planets, there's lots of those, that at the right conditions you're going to have water, and therefore you're going to let this chemistry in warm oceans get on with it. And we've done it in our own laboratories of mixing up the primordial soup that would have existed on the Earth. And carbon atoms just want to make bigger and bigger carbon atoms, just the way they're made in this universe for some crazy reason. And you end up, in a very short period of time, producing amino acids, which are pretty big molecules and the building blocks of proteins. And DNA is just really a computer, if you like, a molecular computer that makes and directs how proteins work together to make cells, basically. So it appears that carbon atoms just want to make the kind of life that we're based on. And remember, it can make any extreme from that tiny red mite on my keyboard up to a blue whale. And these are huge multicellular organisms that have very complicated systems going on inside them. Yeah. And there's no reason why that can't be replicated everywhere else on the trillion stars or the planets
so the
that
answer,
we know of in the
universe. Answer to my question is yes, it can be based on the same things that we are made of ourselves, even in another galaxy, for example.
We don't know yet. Where the science is at the moment is that nobody has produced DNA in a laboratory or mixing up the chemicals. It probably took millions of years in a laboratory the size of the Earth's oceans to do that. So the idea is you give it enough time, we will get there. But maybe we don't. And that's still a hot topic of debate among scientists. And then the next thing is, how do you go from single-celled organisms up to multi-celled organisms? Something very special happened on the Earth when cells that were eating each other somehow decided not to eat each other, but to work in symbiosis. And that produced multi-celled organisms. Was that a fluke, or will that happen on other planets as well? And then it'll ultimately end up with the huge plant life we had for most of the Earth's history. 90% of the Earth's history are only plants. And then we end up with animals forming, which can now move about under their own energy on the surface and in the sea of the particular planet. And then we end up with things like dinosaurs, which are around for 150 million years or so, and they did not evolve intelligence. Humans, anything, you know, nothing
not
like
as good as
around for 2 million years. Yet we've evolved intelligence. Why didn't the dinosaurs do that?
So why did it take so long?
Nobody knows the answer to.
Why did it take so long, do you think, on this planet to develop intelligence? Although some people say it hasn't happened yet.
Nobody knows. And I've asked. The great thing about, you know, producing our magazine every month is you get to meet the world's top scientists. Yeah. And you can ask them these questions. And we read about their research and reporting in the magazine every month as well. And the basic answer is they don't really know. Somebody has an idea. And then they go off and investigate it to see is it realistic, and sometimes they find out something interesting and sometimes they don't. The best answer to intelligence that I've heard of is that the human brain is a huge energy consumer, and you need a colossal amount of food in your environment to fuel a vast organ like that. And it just wasn't necessary for the dinosaurs at the time. They were prolific. They didn't need to have these huge brains. So they didn't evolve intelligence, which unfortunately for us is probably just a byproduct of evolution. It wasn't the universe wasn't designed to produce it. It just happened accidentally. Maybe there was an abundance of food around when humans started to evolve and it gave them the slight edge. But right now, you know, 80% of the food you eat every day is powering your brain. So you're really a brain with
machine.
You'll call the body attached to it.
There was one. When I was growing up, I was taught that dinosaurs may have had a very small cranial brain, but they had other brain material in where we would call our solar plexus and in their knees and other joints, and that the combination of all these this brain material made their brain much bigger than ours. And so that's to look at the size of their brain and say they were unintelligent creatures and that they only had a little pea-sized brain is a misinterpretation of history.
Regardless of the size, the physical size of their brain, where are their machines? Where are their computers? Where are their buildings and their monuments? Where's their art?
But
where's
they
all
didn't
these
need
things
it.
That intelligence
yeah,
produced?
But no animals
no,
except
there's
maybe
no evidence that they became. Yeah. A higher level of
okay.
intelligence like that.
But they
that.
Didn't. They didn't need it because their function was to alter the Earth's the shape of the Earth to create an ecosystem where other life forms could survive in the Earth.
Like, so their function.
The Earth,
okay,
itself,
so
the Earth itself is a living
it.
Organism.
So that goes right back to what I said. They didn't evolve it.
Yeah.
So
okay.
we didn't need it either. For some reason, it happened either because there was a need or because it just happened accidentally. Yeah. And we ended up with this very large brain that's not designed to move us around. It's designed to figure things out, to solve problems. And then we have evolved this sentient intelligence that can contemplate the universe, build machines and experiments and figure it all out. And we, as far as we know, are the only thing in the universe that has done that. Maybe the universe is teeming.
We haven't explored the universe yet, so we don't know about that.
We just don't know. It's too early.
And some people
asked us this question 1,000 years.
Yeah, and some people said that life actually came from other planets originally with comets or stuff like that. So there might be life on other planets that came from somewhere else.
In the pagan tradition that I grew up in, we look at life as a progression, and the function of humans who don't know their own function like man doesn't know his own function. He's the only animal that doesn't. Our function is to become the awareness of the Earth, that the Earth becomes aware of itself as a living organism, and that we collectively can become the brain and the central nervous system of the Earth.
Okay, we have to stop.
That's
here.
Sorry.
David, it's getting late now, so if you have something to say, we'd say it now, because maybe I announce your lecture.
Yeah, I would like to invite everybody to come and hear Niamh Shaw give our New Year public lecture on the 13th of January. Since Trinity College, tickets are on the website now, astronomy.ie. Bring the whole family. She is a brilliant performer. She is a scientist by training, but scientists can act as well. She's been on Fair
City. She obviously is an actor as well.
She's also been on one of those projects where they lock you up inside a habitat and simulate what it would be like to live on Mars so you can figure out the kind of problems you're going to come up against. Yeah. And she's going to tell the story of how they got on.
I'd like to find out. It's a pity she was not able to come over here today. We're going to have to stop it. And thank you very much, David. And Happy New Year. Happy Christmas. Happy solstice. Happy everything. And we're going to have to stop that. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.